Hey!
This is JJ and Alex.
I made a name for myself, I told you I won't be denied.
As you wrap up your day, it's time to get your fix of the teams you live for and the sports you love. This is JJ and Alex, presented by G2G Bars on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Woo, what a week. I need a Tylenol. Can we have any more big stories dropped this week? I just want to watch the Masters in peace. Seriously. Mitch, we kind of talked about this last night at 5 o'clock. Like, this is odd. We went through this whole list of Kentucky coaching candidates, and one big name after another says no, and eventually you and I are looking at it and say, well, the next guy on the list is Mark Pope.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had some information that he canceled all those meetings yesterday and wasn't taking texts from people at school. And less than an hour after we ended the show yesterday, boom, news broke that Kentucky has hired Mark Pope as their new head men's basketball coach. And congratulations to Mark Pope. That's his dream job. That's awesome for him. But now BYU, after having their great first season in the Big 12, is looking for new leadership. Just like that, boom. When, you know, a week ago, even less, when the Calipari news broke on Sunday night. So less than a week ago, there was no indication that there was any change on the horizon at Kentucky because Calipari had a $36 million buyout. Man, things can change.
Yeah, that national championship game between UConn and Purdue feels like, you know, 2 months ago. Between all the big news that has happened this week, and for BYU, it's been a whirlwind. And, you know, Mark Pope is someone that has an ability to make an impression, and he clearly had that on Kentucky's AD Mitch Barnhart, who they had gotten to know each other for years. And that relationship and Mark Pope having that piece of being a captain on one of the greatest and most iconic Kentucky teams really kind of put him over the top where they're willing to take that risk. And initial, you know, reaction from Kentucky fans last night was they were fired up. They were ready to sabotage that hire in some way. They were. They seem to be rallying around it now after, you know, Rick Pitino endorsed it and gave support. But, you know, Mark Pope will be a good coach at Kentucky. He will do a good job for them. And he did a really good job for BYU. But, man, his sudden departure leaves so many questions for BYU that need to be answered in short order. And, you know, we'll unpack it all obviously over the next, you know, 3 hours or 4 hours here on the show. But it's a critical moment for BYU because not only is it the first, you know, major sport hire in the Power Conference era for BYU, but it's the first hire in the NIL era. And you're seeing a ripple effect on that already with some of the transfer portal moves that have happened today. Time is of the essence for BYU to act because the longer you wait, the more uncertainty for players as they would want to, you know, they want to get some clarity and move on with their futures and take care of their opportunities for the years to come.
Well, let's get into the details. We'll mention some of the candidates for the job. There has been some players from BYU that have already entered the transfer portal. We'll share with you who those are. A lot to get to on this story as Mark Pope is leaving Provo for Lexington. JJ and Alex is brought to you by G2G Bars with all natural ingredients, no preservatives, and plenty of protein. G2G Bars are perfect for anyone who needs a tasty and nutritious boost. Jeremiah Jensen, Mitch Harper in for Alex Carey. Mitch, the perfect person to be here today to break this down. Our Cougar Insider on KSLSports.com. Let's get into it. Mark Pope leaving BYU is the cut at 3 o'clock.
It's time for the biggest story of the day. This is What Made the Cut with JJ and Alex on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Mark Pope lands his dream job. Of course, Mark Pope is an all-time favorite Kentucky Wildcat. He was the captain of their 1996 national championship team, arguably one of the best college basketball teams ever. Several players from that team ended up in the NBA, including Mark Pope. And now he has a chance to go back to his alma mater and lead that program, which is considered one of the best in the country. It will be his challenge. It's a challenge he's willing to take on. But in the wake of that, he leaves BYU in a situation where they're now looking for new leadership. We'll get into that here in a moment. I want to read a couple statements real quick before I get to you, Mitch. Mark Pope says, the University of Kentucky is the pinnacle of coaching in college basketball. It's the definition of blue blood program. We're hanging a banner as the expectation every year. Equally as important, UK changed my life forever as a human being. The love and passion I have for this program, this university, and the people of the Commonwealth goes to the depth of my soul. Tom Homo's statement on his departure is, we want to thank Coach Mark Pope for all that he has given to the BYU men's basketball program in his 9 years here as an assistant and head coach. His unique combination of passion, dedication, creativity, and excitement has inspired our BYU community. He led our team to a very successful inaugural Big 12 season and left the program in a position of strength moving forward. There is a lot for Cougar Nation to be excited about right now. We wish Mark all the best. As the head coach at his alma mater, he will always be a part of our BYU family. And I want to do the same. Mark Pope is great. I enjoyed my relationship with him. He was great to me, and even going back to his time at Utah Valley, and I know how much this opportunity means to him, and I get why he's leaving. But he's leaving. So we're going to turn the page and move on as well, Mitch. Mark Pope is in Kentucky. This period of BYU basketball is over. It was an interesting run, a good run, but it's time to look forward. What does the future of BYU basketball look like, and what is your reaction to this move?
I don't feel like it's doom and gloom for BYU, but time is critical for BYU to move forward. BYU's got players. It's one of the few programs in college basketball where you do have players that want to be part of that program, that brand that is BYU, because some guys they love – they dreamed of being BYU Cougars, and those guys are on the roster, still in the program right now, but they need assurances, and they need to know who their next head coach is going to be, and if that next head coach wants them to be part of his program. And so the time is critical for BYU, but there's still good things about BYU going forward. BYU, despite its limited coaching pool, always does a good job with its coaches. You go back all the way to Stan Watts in 1949 when he got hired. Every single one of these BYU coaches in men's basketball has had at least three NCAA tournament appearances. The only one that didn't was Mark Pope, and he would have had a third had it been not been for the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020 taking away the big dance. So this is a program that consistently, no matter how shallow the pool is, you get good coaches here, and they win. And BYU basketball has won at a high level. I think what creates the uncertainty for the fans right now and for the tense feeling of how critical this hire is because there's no stability right now in a new iteration of the Big 12. And the league is going to get deeper. We talked about how it feels like earlier this week it was a lifetime ago already, and it is. I put out my way too early power rankings, and that's completely crumbled up and thrown in the trash now. But at that juncture, you laid out all the programs, and you go, there's Arizona now. There's Baylor, who maintains Scott Drew. You've still got Kansas. You've got Houston. You've got Iowa State. Just go on and on down the list. Texas Tech, who was a thorn in your side last year. I mean, there are so many good coaches, good brands, good programs that win at the highest levels, and now your pool that was always been successful in the WCC, the Mountain West, the WAC, what does that look like in the Big 12, and does that shallow pool kind of get exposed in the gauntlet of the Big 12 without structure? Because Mark Pope had success this past year due to that structure and that continuity that was in the program for a full, year and a half, 2 years. And that's what creates some uneasiness about maybe expectations and recalibrating what felt like 4 days ago a way too early program that could be a top 15 team in college basketball next year, suddenly being in that back half of the Big 12 if you don't get things, some answers really quick and really build up this roster.
So there's some urgency, and this is a massive, massive hire for BYU. Like you mentioned, this is not a WAC or a Mountain West or a WCC hire. You are in the Big 12. This is the best conference overall, top to bottom, in college basketball, and you got to nail this hire. Do you have your big board ready?
Absolutely.
Okay. Before you get into your big board, I do want to mention some other news today regarding BYU basketball, Mitch, and this is big. is Dallin Hall's in the transfer portal. Your number one player, your go-to guy, is in the portal.
Yep.
And Ali Khalifa is in the portal. Those are significant developments, as you already have guys, it's not officially that they're gone, but they're in the portal looking around, and who knows where they want to go or what they're looking at, but they're looking elsewhere, and that's not a positive for the program. So there is some urgency here. You got to hire the right guy. You want to keep these guys in the fold, or you want to have a guy that's going to be able to bring in some dynamic players that'll be able to compete in this league. So let's hear it. Let's go through your big board, and we'll weigh pros and cons of all the guys that you think have a shot at this job.
Well, the number one coach would be Mark Madsen, but he made it pretty clear today that he's not interested. Well, he said he affirmed his commitment to Cal.
Yeah.
And in a statement on X, which that might be the quickest coach statement ever after word comes out that he's potentially a candidate for the job. So that head coaching experience is what made Mark Madsen attractive. But as we talked about this week, in the hypotheticals, if Mark Pope got this job, Mark Madsen, Bay Area guy, not committed to BYU, no connections other than the fact that he's LDS, and simply being LDS doesn't inspire everyone to want to be the head coach at BYU. Cal's still going to be in the power conferences. They're going to be in the ACC, a league that, quite frankly, in the NCAA tournament, outperformed the Big 12, and this season they outperformed in head-to-head. So there's a lot of upside potentially for Cal. They're not going to have as much money as BYU, oddly enough, when it comes to media rights. But Cal and that niche and him being at home in the Bay Area is still attractive for Mark Madsen.
Let me say this real quick on Madsen before we move on. I believe he would have been the best candidate.
No question.
And he would have been a home run hire. And the problem here is, yes, he is committed to Cal. But you know what else is a problem is he has a massive buyout because he just signed an extension with Cal after having a great season with the Bears. BYU's not paying a buyout for a head coach. Not going to happen.
They typically don't pay buyouts for coaches that have years remaining and are underperforming. They don't pull the plug and just fire someone if they got a buyout that way. I mean, BYU is, again, and that's where this search is so fascinating because you are now the big time BYU. You are now at the stages you have dreamed of for a century. You know, talking to Mark Pope throughout this year, he's like, this is what BYU has dreamed of for 100 years, to be in the Big 12. Well, we know after a year, you can win in this thing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when you're going to have, in this era of college sports, it's almost unreasonable to think a coach is going to be around, you know, more than 7 years. You know, and any one of these coaches that we'll get into here in this big board, you know, they're not necessarily BYU men through and through. They're seeing an opportunity, and hey, it's a Big 12 head coaching job. Absolutely, I want that. And because of BYU's unique hiring circumstances, these guys get elevated and put on a platform where they could legitimately get these jobs. And I feel like the number one guy that BYU should get in their shallow pool of candidates is Chris Burgess. And to me, that's the number one guy that going forward now. As Mark Madsen, again, has reaffirmed his commitment to Cal, Chris Burgess, Utah basketball assistant coach, needs to be the top priority because – one, he's young. He's only 44 years old. And two, he's got BYU coaching experience and experience with some of the players that are currently in the program. You think about Trevin Nell, Atiki Aliatiki, Richie Saunders, and also maybe more importantly and the biggest piece of all, he was heavily involved in the recruitment of Colin Chandler. And if you can get that guy on board and not let Colin Chandler maybe go to Kentucky and keep him home in Utah, that alone might be worth rolling the dice and taking risks. But man, it is crazy to think 10 years ago, Chris Burgess was a, you know, assistant volunteer, student assistant coach. I didn't remember the term, but student assistant coach at the University of Utah. And then 10 years later, he's a P5 coach, going to battle against Bill Self, going to battle against Jerome Tang. That's a wild thought, but he wants this job. BYU, you know, has success with coaches that have previous BYU head coaching experience. Chris Burgess makes a lot of sense, and in many ways, JJ, he's a lot like Mark Pope, where he's been at the highest levels of the sport. He played for Coach Mike Krzyzewski. He played for Rick Majerus. He played in the NBA. He had a decorated international career. He's a big man. He can coach the bigs. I think there's a lot to like, and he's got connections in the international recruiting, the transfer portal, and he's kind of relentless in that same kind of vein as Mark Pope is, and I think that works for BYU, and I think, you know, Burgess understands what can get into BYU, what type of athlete works at BYU. He's had a lot of success with Muslim athletes at recruiting them to BYU. He knows what it would take in terms of personnel and assembling a roster, what his style would be and his coaching as a head coach. That's questions that have to be answered, but I think he knows how to construct a competitive winning roster at BYU, and I feel like that he should be the favorite to win this job.
I agree with you. If BYU is only going to hire a coach that is a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and if that is, that's, they're not going to look outside of that.
And in some ways, to even go deeper, sometimes they go to Temple recommend holders.
Okay, then the pool is very, very thin. Yes. And I think that Chris Burgess is the choice. I don't think there's any doubt about that. He checks every single box if that is going to be a qualification.
Yes.
Now, obviously, we've heard that that's not necessarily a policy. It's just it's been preferred. But it has. There's no precedent of it happening otherwise.
And also, Tom Holmoe, this is his third coaching search at BYU.
Yes.
And he's done a great job with the previous two hires, getting Dave Rose and Mark Pope. Why would he suddenly reinvent the wheel and potentially his last hire and suddenly go rogue and say, I'm going to go get someone who's never been at BYU, doesn't know LDS culture? That it's just, he's going to go that knows what works.
Yeah.
And he's had success. Credit to Tom Holmoe. He's not as, I would not say I think he admits that, you know, basketball is not always his strongest. He's a football-minded AD. His football is first for him. But he's got people, Brian Santiago, even, you know, Danny Ainge is always around BYU.
Mm-hmm.
And he could be a resource to say, hey, give me your thoughts on this guy. He's got people in his inner circle that he can turn to and pick their brain as to could this coach work and figure out which coaches would be successful at BYU. And look, you know, it's always interesting. I think even fans listening that are BYU fans, they almost in a way keep up their own boards of who could potentially be coaches, because it's almost just, it's so unique to try to figure out who are the LDS coaches that are coming up through the ranks. And you hear these job titles and go, what are we talking about? This is a search for potentially the BYU head coach position, but at the same time, you have to kind of turn every stone to potentially find that potential next big thing. I remember years ago, we had Tim Legome on earlier this week, and he brought up, you know, Steve Cleveland came out of left field, out of nowhere, when no one was expecting it, a junior college head coach. But Burgess makes a lot of sense to me. And if it's not him, the next guy would be Barrett Perry, who's a UNLV Rebels assistant coach. He's been a guy that's been around coaching for 30 years.
He almost got the job when Pope got it.
Heavily involved in that last search.
Yes.
When Pope was being pursued by UNLV, by Nevada, and BYU didn't know if they were going to be able to land Mark Pope, Barrett Perry was right there in the thick of things. And he has been a head coach at Portland State and at the JC ranks. And it was interesting, kind of looking in the archive of stuff and digging more intel on these candidates. You know, Barrett Perry once on a preseason magazine in 2014 from Lindy's, they had a junior college basketball preview. He was the head coach at Indian Hills. They called him the JUCO version of John Calipari, how he was so aggressive in recruiting, got all the heralded guys and turned them into stars. You know, Barrett Perry knows people in the basketball world, and he has a lot of connections, like Chris Burgess. So I think that those two guys, I feel like both would take this job, and I think that you could have a lot of success. But I feel like for Burgess, he's got that BYU experience, and that is valuable, because when you don't know the levels of what you have to go through to get something done at BYU, that can be frustrating. And Burgess already has a knowledge of this is how it goes there, and I'm willing to take that challenge on because I want to be a head coach and I want to move up the ranks in this profession. And now that you know BYU can be a springboard to Kentucky, absolutely you want to get this job more than ever.
Is there any wild card in the mix here? Do you have any is it worth mentioning anybody else?
The wild card to me in this one would be a Quincy Lewis or Kevin Young from the Phoenix Suns.
An NBA guy.
An NBA guy who once upon a time was the Utah Flash head coach,
yep.
the Defenders. the NBA Developmental League, when it was called that, now the G League. But he's the associate head coach of the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah.
But how, if you're BYU and the connections that Danny Ainge has, and Danny Ainge has a history with Phoenix, and and you know, Ryan Smith's got, you know, connections to the NBA. They can dial up people. They got contacts of people. But if you're young, why would you? I mean, you're working with Bradley Beal. You're working with Kevin Durant. For BYU, they would love to get a coach, potentially, maybe, that could say to recruits, I've coached these guys, but he has really no college coaching experience.
Yeah.
And that's where you would have to arm him with an incredible staff that's been in the trenches of college coaching. To me, it's Perry and Burgess. Those are the top two guys. And, you know, Quincy Lewis is another name, too. Lehigh High School. But that feels more kind of just like Utah County. What's the reach outside of what goes on in Utah County? Great history there at Lone Peak and Lehigh High School recently, but
Quincy's a Hall of Fame basketball coach in the state.
Legendary.
Yep.
I mean, he won a national title at Lone Peak, but to me it's Chris Burgess because he's dealing with the battles every day of college recruiting. And again, I mean, whenever you're talking about coaching in this climate and coaching moves, you know, could he bring people with him that he's formed relationships with? And look, it's up to those individual athletes, but, you know, that's what comes with the deal. And going back to, you know, Dallin Hall and Ali Khalifa, as far as BYU players in the portal, you know, Dallin Hall could be a guy that comes back, I feel. This is one of those deals where he wants to see his options. We were talking about this days ago, that Dallin Hall was a possibility to go into the portal, even if Mark Pope stayed. There was real rumblings about that being a thing for Dallin Hall. So it's not a complete surprise that he's there. And if BYU gets a coach that he feels he can work with, you know, I could see him coming back. But he's going to have options for sure in that transfer portal as to what his next move is going to be.
All right, Mitch Harper will have more on this later in the show, the latest he's getting on where BYU is in this search. My opinion, they should, if BYU was really serious about doing something big now in the Big 12, they would go outside of the box. They would
Great
bypass
point.
The LDS requirements that is or isn't, we don't know. This is big-time college basketball, and if you want to succeed at a big-time level, you need to think outside of the box. You need to grow, and you need to get bigger. But they're not going to. And that's why I think Chris Burgess is the right choice. When you think of all the qualifications that BYU is looking for, if you need an LDS coach, Chris Burgess is the target. All right, when we come back, it's Jazz Daily. The Jazz finally end that losing streak. My goodness. They go out with a win at home. We'll break that down, and we'll also look at the latest on the Western Conference race in the NBA, and even the East is pretty wild. The playoffs are going to be great. All that and more next when we continue here on JJ and Alex, 97.5. KSL Sports Zone.
You know what's coming.
Your daily deep dive into everything Utah Jazz.
It's done.
All season long and even in the off season, it's Jazz Daily with JJ and Alex on your exclusive home of Utah Jazz basketball. 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Basketball, give me the ball because I'm gonna dunk it!
12.8 seconds to play. Jazz do have one timeout left. Rockets have none. Inbound right to Šamanić. Šamanić gets it knocked away and stolen. Rockets have it. Down by three. Van Vliet, 4-3 in the tie. Missed badly. Rebound tap locked and has it. 1.5 seconds left and the Jazz will win.
Finally, the streak is over. 13 straight losses. That's history. The Jazz go out winners, at least in front of the home fans. 124-121. They win and they clinch a winning record at home this season for the 10th straight year, which is good. I think it got tired of losing. And obviously, it didn't really matter. It got to the point where it didn't matter anymore. But you don't want your last home game to be a loss. You want to end on a good note. There's some really good young players that need to feel that excitement and energy in the building going out with a win. And the fans were great last night, as they have been all season long. For all of you that have been to games and a lot of games, especially season ticket holders, man, you're the best, because this team needs the support in a time when it could easily not be given. So for those of you that are diehard fans that are going there and having a great time each and every night, that's an important part of this whole piece of breaking out.
And it was great to see some of these young guys, you know, that like a Kenneth Lofton Jr., who's been a sensation in the G League at times, goes for 14-9. And, you know, just that sort of, again, big picture, what does that mean? Really much nothing. But, again, to just get that win, not in the season on a 16-game skid, and to, you know, get a home win and clinch a winning record at home, I think that's important for the franchise moving forward. I think it's something that you can kind of build off of and feel like, hey, that's a feel-good moment for the fans on a otherwise just challenging year where you have to kind of remind yourself of, again, who – oh, yeah, the season's still going on. This is still going through the grind of the year. But to see some of those performances, I thought Lofton was really impressed with that 14-9 performance.
Yeah, seven players scoring double figures. It was good to see those guys get an opportunity to build their confidence. So road game tonight in L.A. against the Clippers. You'll hear it right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone, starting at 8:30. Pregame show with Tim Lacombe and Jake Scott at 7:30. We'll take you up all the way up to the pregame show. And then, you know, they're not going to win tonight. And then they finish the season Sunday in San Francisco against the Warriors. So we're here. This is the end of the season. And next week we're going to get into a lot of off-season primers and stuff. That's going to be fun. But it's also fun in the NBA right now, Mitch, because the Western Conference is awesome. I mean, we're looking right now at Golden State, Sacramento, and the Lakers – all tied in this play-in situation. And this is fluid. A lot of these teams still with two games left in the regular season. This could go either way. It's really exciting.
It is exciting. And you know, there's so much still at stake in the Western Conference side of it. I mean, the East is pretty locked up with the Celtics. Clearly, you know, they're the number one seed. They got that on lockdown. And there's some jockeying for seeding. You know, maybe there's three teams in the hunt for the two seed in the East. But you know, I think that this is going to be a crazy finish, and it should be just an entertaining NBA playoffs once again. I've always believed that as far as professional sports go, it's the best postseason around. Like, the NBA playoffs are just outstanding because it truly, you do get the best team to win. In other sports, I feel like not always you get the best team coming out on top. You know, in Major League Baseball, you might get a team that just gets hot and they ride the wave and win the World Series. In the NBA, that's not the case. Like, you go through 4-7 game series, you are the best team in the league. And that's why it's must see. And the NBA playoffs are going to be a lot of fun once again.
This play-in situation is really interesting and it's fun. I think that both the Warriors, Lakers, and Kings are going to go 1-1 to finish the season, which puts them right at 45-35. I believe the Kings get the tiebreak in that situation, so it still would be Warriors, Lakers in a one-game play-in situation to keep their season alive. Wow, the NBA has got to be kind of loving that. I mean, I think the NBA would prefer to have LeBron and Steph in a seven-game first-round playoff series, but that's not going to be the case. One of these teams is not going to get there, and it's not going to happen. So having that game with everything at stake, it's going to have an NCAA tournament like feel. Like, you win or go home.
Yes.
So can you imagine that dynamic next Tuesday or Wednesday when the Lakers and Warriors suit it up, if that's the case? I mean, we'll see. If the Kings drop to 0-2 in the last two, mm-hmm. then we're having a different conversation, which would stink. I think it would be fun to have a Lakers-Warriors play-in game.
It would be. And, you know, that would be just epic must-see TV. And I think, honestly, the Lakers, because you wonder, both those teams feel like they could, you know, win a couple series. But, you know, I feel like I'd be more afraid of the Warriors, though, you know, if you get draw them in a series, just because of that ability for that group. They still have that ability where they know that they've done it. The Lakers, the only time they've done it with LeBron was in the bubble. And that's the only time they've reached the finals. They've reached the pinnacle of the playoffs. And, you know, the Lakers got far more size than the Warriors. But I'd be more afraid of the Warriors turning it on and having success, because I think the Lakers have been struggling in the last few games.
Well, the Warriors have done just that. They've won 9 of 10. Now, think about this. If the Lakers don't survive the play-in and they don't get that 8 seed, and we're assuming that's what they'd be playing for at this point, that could change. But they're two games behind the Suns right now, so they're not climbing up. They're going to be in that area where they end up at 8th at best, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if they miss the playoffs, it's 3 out of 6 years since LeBron came to L.A.
Yep.
And you had AD, too. That's crazy.
Absolutely. It'd be nuts to the point where you say, was it a bust for LeBron. I mean, that would be the talking point. Was has his time in L.A. so far been a flop? Because, you know, when you get a guy like LeBron, you're expecting, you know, titles, multiple titles, not one, not two, like the whole cliche with him. You know, that's what you're expecting. And to not even make the playoffs? I mean, that was always the minimum. Like, LeBron never misses the playoffs. And I know he's gotten older, but still, the Lakers, I feel like the Lakers front office has been mismanaged, and they've had so many issues that compound with the on-court product. But, you know, that would be just a really tough stat that you go, wow, that's how it's played out thus far if they don't get out of that play-in round.
What do the Lakers do in the offseason if they do miss the playoffs, which could be a reality here in a few days?
I mean, personally, I'd like to see a rebuild. I think that would be the move to kind of start build to something for the future, because even with LeBron, even with AD, you're still just hovering in this play-in tournament threshold. I mean, last year they were the seventh seed and they got out of the play-in round, but that's where they've been living. They're not in the upper tier of this Western Conference at all. I mean, that's where Denver's occupying. The Clippers continue to be tough. Dallas is playing outstanding right now. I wouldn't want to mess with Dallas at all. You know, that just feels like the Lakers, they're just relying on LeBron, AD. They're going to turn it on in April and May when it matters. But you can't always bank on that. And just think, and especially if you get to a one-game setting, shots don't fall. Like an NCAA tournament, as you noted, like, your whole season's done. So don't put yourself in that predicament. You got to play. That's what I like about the play-in round, is that it does add meaning when you look back and say, that game in January that you just kind of let go because it was a back-to-back, well, that, you know, that mattered. If you got that win and you got a few others, you're maybe avoiding this play-in threshold, and you're maybe the sixth seed. So that's what I think is the great value of this play-in tournament, is that really every game in some capacity, when you go back, does have significance and helps really shape what the postseason will look like.
Another thing I'll mention that's really starting to look like a reality, in fact, I think it's almost a lock at this point, it might even be a lock, is the Clippers-Mavericks first-round playoff series in that 4-5 match.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's going to be a good
Sign
one.
Me up for that. Here's another twist, though. You're the Nuggets. You're the defending NBA champions. If they finish this off, they'll be the number one seed. Imagine. You're the Nuggets, and your first round playoff matchup is the Warriors or the Lakers. What kind of reward is that for finishing number one in the West?
I don't think the Nuggets would bat an eye, though, because they swept the Lakers last year.
They wouldn't. But,
but still,
you get my point. You're going to have to eliminate LeBron.
Yeah,
you're going to have to eliminate Steph.
Oh, yeah. That's tough. I mean, and the NBA would love that. They're probably hoping that happens for the TV ratings that would deliver. But, yeah, that would definitely not be a reward. And kind of makes you wonder, Denver could be 1, 2, or 3, same with the T-Wolves or the Thunder, all three of those teams in the hunt for one of those top three spots. Is the better spot to be maybe the 3 seed and play either the Pelicans or the Suns?
How about this? What if the Nuggets play the Suns 1-8 in the first round, which is very possible.
Yes, that could happen.
The Suns have beat them 3 out of 4 this year.
That's a good point. That's the one team where the Suns play at the level that we expect the Suns to be at.
Yeah. It's just crazy to me that you have the Lakers, Warriors, and Suns who could be the 7 and 8 seeds. And even the Kings team, that's interesting. They have not played well in the last half of the season.
No,
they're
not.
They're the team here that I'm thinking, man, that's the team that could plummet right out of this playoff. Unless they get 2 wins here and put themselves in a position where they can have one of those games at home. But I'm looking at this and I'm just thinking, man, the West is so good that a team like the Phoenix Suns that has 3 potential Hall of Famers on their team is 47-33 and 7th in the West, and they could potentially miss the playoffs. It's just nuts how great this is. But I love the play-in, and I'm looking forward to that next week. The NBA playoffs are going to be outstanding. All right, we got to take a break. Before we do that, though, I want to mention that every Wednesday on the KSL Sports Zone is Win Ticket Wednesday. This week we're giving away tickets to Blue October. They still together? They're still a thing? Okay. At Utah First Credit Union Amphitheater on August 24th, 2024. So get ready for that next Wednesday if you want to see Blue October. We're going to be giving away tickets. All right. We got to take a break. When we come back, it's Would You Rather. It'll be a Masters theme for Would You Rather. A little NBA, too. So we'll be right back after this. JJ and Alex, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
balls.
Listen, everybody.
Real life hypotheticals to get your brain churning. As JJ and Alex ask, would you rather?
Welcome back, JJ and Alex. 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jeremiah Jensen, Mitch Harper in for Alex Curie. It is a Masters weekend. We are watching it right now. Scottie Scheffler, 7-under. No shock here. We talked about it all week. Scottie Scheffler is the number one golfer in the world. He's the favorite, and here we are. He's through 12 on day two, and he's got a one-shot lead over Bryson DeChambeau. So here we go. Max Homa, I think, is 6-under as well. So tie for second between DeChambeau and Homa. Would you rather time now, and we're going to start with a Masters-themed would you rather. Mitch, would you rather be a PGA golfer that just simply made the cut at the Masters and finish outside the top 20, or would you rather win another non-major PGA Tour event? Which would be more of an achievement for you?
I want the win. No one remembers the guy that finished 38th at the Masters. I want the win.
How about let me tweak this up a little bit. You finish.
You're gonna go with money.
Would you rather win? Would you rather finish top five at the Masters or win a non-major PGA Tour event during the season? If you were promised one or the other, which would you take?
Top five, because what? That's probably guaranteed. What? 500,000, I would guess, if I had to look it up.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it's a nice paycheck. Yeah.
720,000 last year.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah, I'm taking that. I'm taking that. Fifth place finish.
PGA Tour wins are not easy to come by. Like, that's what you're judged by. How many wins do you have? Have you won PGA Tour events?
But I also want the, I don't know if it's allowed as an actual golfer. I want one of those sandwiches they've got, the pimento cheese.
That's what we really want. It's really about the food.
Just walk through Augusta and, who was that golfer? What was it? A few years back at the Masters where he pulled out a dart and just started.
A lung dart? John Daly?
Not John
Daly.
Or was
it somebody else?
Was it Jose Maria Olazabal?
Yeah, I think so.
It was like, just be that guy and have a pimento cheese.
There you go.
Walk in Augusta. I'll take that.
That's a good life. Okay, one more real quick before we go. Have an aging LeBron James and Bronny James on your NBA team, or just have LeBron and hope he keeps playing as well as he did this year and not use that draft pick on Bronny. But you're not getting LeBron if you don't pick Bronny. So how's that going to work?
Yeah, I would say the latter, because the Bronny stuff, he's not an NBA guy. What, 4 points a game? And look, I always love it NBA draft night when you get like Fran Fraschilla to come out. He's only averaged 2 points a game. He's going to be stashed away in Yugoslavia for 2 years.
Going to have to play in Liechtenstein.
But don't worry about the stats. But like Bronny, he wasn't good at a bad USC team in a weak Pac-12 this year. So yeah. No, I'm not interested in Bronny. Just give me LeBron.
He'll get you LeBron James, though. Sells tickets.
Yeah. That would be, so, we always kind of talk, off the air about the media game and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just imagine how the media world will cover LeBron and Bronny if they were on the same
gross
team. It would be kind of, it'd be nauseating. It'd be honestly nauseating for the NBA, because I feel like the NBA has got to do a better job. Like, we were talking in the previous segment about the Lakers and the Warriors. Like, LeBron and Steph probably, should be maybe done within 5 years?
Oh, less than that.
You would think.
Steph's 35, 36. Right. LeBron's almost 40.
Right.
This isn't going to last forever.
So, you gotta start thinking about highlighting Ant Edwards. I love watching Anthony Edwards and highlighting Jokic and Jamal Murray and those guys. It just doesn't feel like that happens enough, where it's always LeBron, Bronny, LeBron, Steph.
Yeah.
They gotta get better at that, I feel.
You make a great point. The NBA's really gotta move on with their marketing and who they feature. You're absolutely right. I think a lot of fans, everybody knows who LeBron is, but who's the best player in the game right now? Nikola Jokic? I mean, how many people that aren't hardcore basketball junkies really care?
Yeah.
That's a problem.
My son, he's gotten into basketball the past few years, my oldest, and he loves Ant Edwards and, he loves his shoes too. But, for the basketball junkies that love, firing up League Pass and watching games, they know those names. But I think for
the
casuals,
sure,
they don't know, the next big wave. And I feel like, again, the media coverage of Bronny kind of embodies, they're just – focus on these actual studs, even though they might be playing in Minnesota. Maybe, Keontae George here in Utah. He's going to be an absolute stud for the Jazz. Focus on these guys, the next big things. I always like that. I just feel, like they're trying to pin down Bronny as the next big thing. It's like, no, he has not shown anything that warrants that status other than his name.
The NBA's got to move on and find some other stars that are younger stars that they can market better, because we're not going to have Steph and LeBron for long. In fact, this coming week might be the final straw. We're getting to that point. So, all right, it's Masters weekend, and we're going to get you ready. Brian Taylor of Real Golf Radio. Nobody does it better. Real Golf Radio, 8 to 10 a.m. on Saturdays on the KSL Sports Zone. He is live from Augusta when we come back with an update on the Masters. Tiger Woods, Tony Finau, Bryson DeChambeau, Scottie Scheffler, all the guys. Who's winning? Who's not? Who looks good today? Who doesn't? What's the course like? Brian will break it down for you next on JJ and Alex, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.